Everyone, thank you for joining us today. I'm excited that we were able to get one of our alums all the way in from Seattle, Washington. This is Ben Carlson. Just a quick, some backstory on Ben. He grew up in part of a military family, moved around quite a bit. He ended up graduating high school from Robinson Secondary in Fairfax. He was a football player at Robinson. He ended up going to Shenandoah University, where he helped start their football program. As a freshman, they went winless. Ben did not quit, and he ended up sticking around and playing all 4 years. And his senior year, they were conference champions. So he was able to see some start something and see something through success. He, in college, he studied biology, and he had aspirations of becoming a pharmacist. We ended up getting a hold of him. He maybe he had his resume posted on a job board, like Monster or something back at the time. He was working to become a pharmacist. He was working at a pharmacy at Giant Food, and he was moonlighting at a Chili's where he was bartending. We called him up and persuaded him to come and take a look at Memory Blue. We said, listen, you're biology, and you have a technical mind, you're personable, you're with your bartending, and your competitive desire, you should consider a career in high-tech sales. Fortunately, we were able to convince him to join Memory Blue, and this was in the early days when the office was in an industrial park, literally across the street from a dump. So we ended up convincing Ben to come work at the company. He ended up going on an account that was out of Silicon Valley, venture-backed company. Based on Ben's performance, he quickly helped turn that into our biggest client at the time. And they added people. And when they added people, Ben took it upon himself to each member of the team that was added to the team, he would take them out back and say, listen, if you do not perform and you fuck this up for me, I will kick your ass. Ben was with us for about a year, and then that company decided to hire Ben, and he went to go work for the company. He worked remotely out of his house, and we'll talk a little bit about what it's like working for an early-stage venture-backed company remotely from your house. He did that for a while. That company ultimately went out of business.
Yeah.
But before that happened, Ben ended up leaving the small startup world and going and working for a big, huge company, Symantec. Did that for a number of years. Then moved to Amazon Web Services out in Seattle. We relocated and moved out there. Spent 5+ years there, and has recently joined Google. So we'll talk a little bit about his background and ask a bunch of questions that I have here. And then if you guys have some additional questions, we'll get into those as well. So please join me and welcome Ben Carlson. So let's start at the beginning, Ben. let's talk about you when you were right out of college and you had aspirations of being a pharmacist.
Yeah.
And you ultimately decided to fold and decide to join Memory Blue. What ultimately decided you, why did you decide to join Memory Blue at the time?
Okay. Where to begin? So I had one of those moms where I was supposed to be the doctor, my brother was supposed to be the lawyer. I don't know if anybody knows what that's like. I unfortunately had the bad habit of not doing my homework when I was young. I was a guy who would just show up and kind of do what I had to, which was a hard lesson to learn later in life. But so I kind of was like, oh, well, clearly don't have the GPA to be a doctor, so let's see if this pharmacy thing works out. As he called out, I learned to make a mean margarita at Chili's as a bartender for a little bit. And while I was doing that, all my friends out of school were like, you know, they were doing the happy hours and going out on weekends, and I was like, man, I got a college degree. I need to find like a 9-to-5. I'll just pick up a 40-hour-a-week job and make a little bit more money and do this for about a year or two, as I was taking like the equivalent of their NCATs, right, and applying to school. And yeah, that's how I tripped on these guys. I think back then people just kind of went online, the monster.com and all that stuff. And I found, you know, I connected with Chris and Mark because they both went to Robinson, and you know, they had a cool story, a cool business idea, and I was like, let's give this a shot. So that's kind of how we synced up.
Okay, good. So what advice would you give the 22-year-old version of yourself the night before you started at Memory Blue?
Of course you'd throw those questions out. You know what? I think at the time I was probably a little bit more like self-inflicted in terms of like the stress on myself to make something happen. And because I didn't know where it would go. And I really didn't have any options. So I don't know if you guys know what that's like, right? You graduate college, you're like, holy crap, I don't know what the heck I want to do with the rest of my life. So you tend to be a little stressed about having to have it all figured out. And kind of like you're hearing the recurring theme here, I thought I was going to be, you know, a pharmacist working at a giant. Thank God I'm not. But like, you know, no offense to anybody who's doing that. And then you just got to be open to kind of just switch gears and try something different, and kind of going through the training they do at Memory Blue with these guys, I was able to develop skill sets and found out there was something else that I was actually good at. So looking back, I think it was probably just to chill out a little bit more, right? You know, keep my head down, keep busting my butt, but not be so stressed out to have it all figured out, right?
Okay. Can I go with the flow?
Yeah. Just realize things will happen, right? You keep your head down, you keep doing the right things. Opportunities present themselves.
Right.
Awesome.
Okay. So then you worked here for a year, and you left to go work for your client. What advice would you give yourself on your last day at Memory Blue before you kind of enter the wild?
What advice? You know what? I don't think I did anything wrong, so I don't know if I did, you know, any advice. It was a cool experience because, again, like the model here is, you put your time in, they pretty much rent you, see if they like you, and you perform, they're going to bring you in-house. During my time at Memory Blue, I made awesome relationships with the folks over at the company that ended up hiring me.
Mm-hmm.
So they all vouched for me. They set me up, you know, working at my it was a townhouse at the time with a couple of roommates. Actually, you know, one lesson I would learn, if you're working from home, learn to get out of your... Not that I was wearing pajamas, but let's call them pajamas. Learn to dress up like you're going to work, because good old Spike, remember him?
Of course.
He randomly dropped in on me one day to check in on me to see how I was doing. So I had to scramble to put some clothes on.
So just for clarification, Spike, what sounds like a casual name, is a extremely high-powered executive. He was the EVP of sales at Agami. He went on to run all of worldwide storage sales for Dell. And so this guy's a high-powered executive, and he just drove up and rang Ben's doorbell, and Ben answered the door in his pajamas.
No, I saw him coming from the parking lot, so I scrambled.
Okay. In your opinion, what's the biggest mistake that you've seen your former Memory Blue contemporaries make when it comes to their career?
I would say, one... I was fortunate to work with some really awesome people,
yeah.
Right? So I don't want this to come across as negative, but like if I were to look at two things that I felt like I did different that helped me out, one, I didn't chase money, right? I can think of one example of a guy who chased money. He moved to the middle of nowhere, ended up closing this big deal, and the startup ended up kind of closing the doors on him and said, we don't want to pay you out, and his kid was in school, so he couldn't move, right? So
you listen to Zach?
So like the thing with chasing money is like look on that theme, if the money will always follow. It will. Like you go out there, you kill it, people love you, you do all the right things, like opportunities get presented for you, right? Like most of my jobs didn't exist until I was approached about them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's one. The other one, and again, you know, this one might be a little controversial, but be open to take a risk. And what I mean by that is I knew some people that could have really gone big opportunities if they were willing to relocate. So kind of not to jump ahead, but my Amazon story, I moved in 2 weeks, right? I just happened to be in the right place in the right time to be able to do that. I didn't have kids in school. I didn't have a house I had to worry about selling. But that was probably one of the best moves I made in my career. But just be, you know, if you have the luxury to, be open to change and taking risks, right, and being flexible.
So I think it'd be interesting to hear kind of how that whole Amazon opportunity materialized. So walk us through that. You're at Symantec, minding your own business, buried in excellence.
I left the startup to go to Symantec because I realized that at the time I was doing inside sales and I was like, man, I want to get to the field. I want to be the point guy. I want to be, you know, whale hunting, right? I wanted the big names at the time. And I realized that while Agami was doing good at the time, before they closed their doors, that I would have to wait on the success of the startup to grow, to create the jobs. Or I could go to a company with a higher glass ceiling that if I just kick butt, the opportunities were already there for me. So I wanted to go from, you know, startup to, at the time, the 800-pound gorilla in the security and backup space. Mm-hmm. And when I switched over, you know, I was 5 years, I had four roles. But it was all based on performance. It wasn't like I was job hopping. They were like, three out of the four, again, didn't exist until I was approached about them. Mm-hmm. And the last one I was doing, I was kind of a sales specialist, overlay specialist with a lot of account managers. And I was supporting and covering the entire Southeast, and I was supporting a brand new product they came out with. And this was another lesson at the time. I spent two-thirds of my time dealing with support escalations because, unfortunately, it was a bad product, mm-hmm. right? It was poorly made. So I didn't enjoy my job, right? And it was in a situation where I enjoyed the people, I enjoyed the company, but the product I was asked to make a living off of and support wasn't delivering. So I was kind of a little burned out, right, with dealing with that, and I was working longer hours. That at the time, not my wife, but my girlfriend, I was like, hey, look, I got some cash aside. Let's go to Vegas for 3 days. I just need to get out of my system. So had an awesome time in Vegas. Martin Guetta, we just partied all day. And then by the time I came back, it would just made it worse. Right? I was like, man, this is how great life can be. Why am I coming back to this life? So I started doing some research, and I was like, at the time, I had a Gartner Magic Quadrant account. And doing some research, I was like, all right, I want to go from being the guy that people feel like they have to because it's like an insurance policy, which is security, like, it's, things break, oh crap, we need something, to I wanted to be the new hotness, right? I wanted to be the guy that everybody talked to. I wanted to be working for the next wave for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I dwindled my research down to two areas. One was the cloud, and the other one was big data, mm-hmm. right? And guys, the one company that kept popping up that I did, I was like, who that? I thought these guys sold books online was Amazon, mm-hmm. right? With Amazon Web Services. So what I ended up doing is, you know, I also learned that I don't like interviewing with companies where I don't know anybody who works there, because, you know, it's like anything. It's a dog and pony show. They're going to want to show off and make it seem like the greatest thing in the world, but if you don't know what things are like,
you learn that inside. You learned that when you interviewed members, yes. Right?
Yeah. I ended up finding out through, so on LinkedIn, I pinged the guy who was in the same frat with Sohail.
Okay.
Right? And yeah. Through that connection, Sohail introduced me.
Okay.
And I ended up meeting a guy who was working for Amazon. So
for you guys who don't know, Sohail was one of Ben's contemporaries at Memory Blue, and so he saw that through that network, he was connected to Sohail and knew Sohail, and asked Sohail to recommend him to this person at Amazon, and because you impressed Sohail while you worked here, Sohail made that introduction.
Yeah.
If you were a lightweight, if you were a lightweight, he may or may not have made that introduction.
Yeah, perhaps. So, fortunately, he's a nice guy, so... So I connected with them, you know, I kind of, you know, spent a lot of time with the guy, you know, asking questions, and just everything I learned about what Amazon Web Services was trying to do kind of flipped the whole IT world on its head, and like, you know, little things like, what do you mean you're going to drop pricing on the customer without telling, you know, negotiating a contract, right? Like, little things where my head was just, and I was like, by the time I was doing my homework, I was like, man, I need to be a part of this. And at the time, Amazon Web Services wasn't a name anybody had heard of, right? It was whenever I would tell people who I worked for, they would ask me about, tell me a story about how they love how fast the shipping was or something.
Yeah.
So I interviewed, and I actually didn't get the first job I interviewed for, which was for Roland in New York.
Okay.
They thought I was a good fit for the company, but maybe not a good fit for the role. So they asked me to jump on an interview for a role in Seattle, and at that time I had fallen in love with the company. And I was like, yeah, sure. Don't quit on me. Give me another shot.
Yeah.
And you'd appreciate this story. So I get on the phone with a guy. Recruiter told me it was an hour, but the guy had the expectation it was only 30 minutes.
Okay.
So I'm interviewing with him, and he asked me a question about complex sales experience. And I didn't get a really good answer. And then he kind of abruptly wrapped up. So I fortunately had the email, his email address at the time. So afterwards, I sat on it, and I didn't feel right about how it left. So I spent the entire night, and I wrote up a big email on a case study one that I did that included a complex sales engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy later told me that he was going to nix me if it wasn't for that email. And because of that, I was offered the job, and within 2 weeks, I had to move to Seattle. So that's kind of my story on how I joined Amazon Web Services.
Great.
At the time, there was no sales org. So
okay.
What's insane about the product is anybody with a credit card, it's like a Gmail account. You can go online, create yourself, right? But they got over to $1 billion in revenue and eventually needed people to talk to people, like
yeah.
talk to customers. So I was fortunate enough to be part of Amazon where it was so tiny that nobody knew who it was. And now, in the cloud computing space, everyone knows who they are.
Right. Okay.
So that's been a fun ride, for sure.
So what ultimately led you to leave to join Google?
Well, so what's interesting about that is I was kind of living the dream at AWS. I got to a point where, so my first 2 years, I was covering really cool startups in Manhattan, guys like Venmo and a bunch of other folks out there. And then I was asked to cover Silicon Valley, and I was like, sure, I'll do this. So I had 10 accounts and from downtown San Francisco to San Jose, and I was seeing some really cool stuff, anything from virtual reality to the IoT space, because anybody could build anything really on the cloud. I got to the point where they were texting me when a new VP joined, which was an awesome place to be in. You're closing big deals, but I think I was getting bored.
Mm-hmm.
After like 5 years, I was like, hey, this has been a fun ride, and I think AWS started to get into like critical mass.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't know if it was working with you guys back in the day, and then every startup kind of experience I've had ever since to kind of create something. I was just looking to learn something new and try something different.
Mm-hmm.
So. A couple of the former AWS guys I knew ended up going over to Google to be part of an acquisition of a company called Orbitera. And what they focus in on is helping companies who created a cloud product, like a SaaS offering, or want to do business with cloud providers. And they've went out and they created a marketplace for it. So what I'm working on now is we're creating something new. So I'm not quite direct sales like I used to,
mm-hmm.
but I'm in business development where I'm strategizing with some really smart people on how we create through partnerships with other technology companies. Our goal is to create a custom white label mobile app store that any enterprise can create of their own apps and put on any device and solve problems around them being able to accurately see services revenue versus just the $2 you get for downloading an app,
mm-hmm.
right? So stuff like that. So that's kind of what I'm doing a little bit now. Totally different. But again, I was kind of just in a mood to try something different.
And you got in through your former AWS colleagues.
Well, it helped, right? Because
yeah.
what I've learned is when you start talking about guys like Amazon, Google, Microsoft, Apple, and all those folks, they all have a very unique way of interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
The old school world that I knew before joining Amazon was all a company cared about was your Rolodex, like who you knew in your network, and then what customers could you walk them in on day one.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if those companies are changing too, but the way it works with the companies I mentioned is they don't care. Mm-hmm. They care more about, it's almost like an addition, sort of, right? They care more about, like, what examples can you talk to that shows that you align with what they're looking for, mm-hmm. right? So if you can't go deep on it, then it really means that you're BSing. Mm-hmm. They care about, you know, again, you being able to communicate what you're going to be able to do for them and how you're going to be able to do it and some ideas that you can bring to the table out of the gate.
Right.
So it's a different game, but definitely been interesting for sure.
Okay. What, in your opinion, what's the biggest mistake you've seen made by sales reps early in their career?
I see it all the time. The number one mistake people make is, and it's one of the best lessons I actually learned, I think, you know, patting you on the back here, but is this idea of, you know, it used to be an old 90s approach where, hey, let me tell you why you need to do this, right? That typically is the number one mistake, like early sales folks make in their career versus approaching it from a perspective of solving a problem, right? Because when you solve somebody's problem, they don't care about what other options are out there. They know that you can solve their pain or their gain, right? Mm-hmm. So the number one problem I see is, you know, people, they spend so much time because they're insecure about the tech, mm-hmm. and so they get a customer on the phone and they just vomit, right? They just go, hey, let me tell you all this cool stuff that I know about product XYZ, and let me tell you why you should do this. Mm-hmm. While the guy on the other phone is going, you don't even know what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Right? That typically is the number one mistake you see out of people, and, you know, versus, you know, obviously asking the right questions, but getting them to own what they want mm-hmm. and solving their problem.
I see. Right? Okay. Yeah, let's talk about getting technical.
Okay.
Right? That's something that you've always had an aspiration and a desire for. I remember when you were at Memory Blue, you were like, hey, I want to get certified. Microsoft certified. I want to get Cisco certified. Yeah. We're like, yeah, I don't know if you need that, but you've stuck with that. Mm-hmm. And I saw that you went and got your computer science.
I'm like a class or two away from another degree
in computer science. Yeah. So, talk about what inspired you to do that, and kind of how has that helped you in your career.
So, my time at Memory Blue, I was working with this rep who was a straight baller. The guy was like closing the biggest deals for the startup, and a piece of advice he gave me that he heard from another guy was the best salespeople are the ones that know everything but pretend to know nothing. So off of kind of that mentality, I kind of took it to an extreme viewpoint of I want to know what it's like for what that guy's job is and the stuff he has to go through. Because then anything that comes out of my mouth, I know is exactly relevant for what he cares about. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, the only way I could do that is I had to understand how the tech worked. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, I had to understand kind of, you know, you don't really need to know speeds and feeds and, you know, how fast you can deploy X, but like, you know, being able to hold your own with the CTO, right? Talk about trends and why, like really understand why they're relevant, mm-hmm. Happened to be something that I've benefited from a lot, from not being afraid to dive deep with mm-hmm. these guys,
right?
Like really deep.
Okay, so would you say that the fear of doing that or the lack of people doing that, it holds other salespeople back, in your opinion?
So there's a lot of opinion actually right now, a lot of articles around how the role of a salesperson is changing, mm-hmm. right? There used to be the day where you could just be the relationship guy. Be the guy that just goes out with the expense account and goes to the baseball games and dinners and all that. And then you pull in your, you know, SE or SA, mm-hmm. and they take care of it. What I'm seeing from the Amazon and Google level, the bar is so high because you're talking to folks that are disrupting the Fortune 500 right now, right? Like, everyone's probably heard about the digital disruption and like all these newer startup companies that are becoming multi-billion dollar companies. They're being led by really stinking smart people. Mm-hmm. Like MIT grads at 14, Stanford vets, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. The goal isn't to be as smart as them. All my customers are smarter than I was, mm-hmm. right? I don't have that kind of background. But the goal is to be able to know enough to build credibility with them, that when they say, hey, this is my problem, you're not going to come back with something that makes no sense to them and waste their time.
Right.
So, and then when you pull in your SC or SA, these guys are freaking superstars.
Yeah.
That, you know, I just think that the level is just, the bar is just being raised, especially in that kind of new age disruptive space right now.
Okay. So looking back, what was your favorite memory of working at Memory Blue?
Favorite memory?
Silence.
You mean it's because there were so many of them. I have to figure out which one I like the most. You know what? Like, I'll tell you, like, I always got a kick out of this guy. I don't know if he does it anymore because he's probably getting older in his days. But this guy used to get so psyched whenever there would be, like, a new lead or, like, a new win. He'd come in just kind of waving his hands a little bit, giving people high fives. And
Mark does that now.
So you know, it's always good to kind of have that positive reinforcement, which was awesome at the time. So that was definitely a positive memory.
Good. Let's talk a little bit about working from home.
Okay.
Like a lot of times when people are at Memory Blue, if that's their dream to go work from home, and you actually live that dream.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the pros. Because there are pros.
And then the cons.
So walk us through the pros and cons of working
from home.
From home.
So it's a double-edged sword. It depends on who you are, right? I know some people that would say they're a heck of a lot more productive when they're at home because they don't deal with distractions of colleagues that just want to talk their face off and they don't get their work done. I know others that aren't very productive at home at all because they're surrounded by home distractions, whether that's little ones running around or, you know, I don't know, just maybe a lack of structure, or like my story about, you know, I just could roll out of bed, don't even take a shower, and I'm still working, right?
Yeah.
For me, I would say I spend about 70-80% of my time in the office.
Now? Okay.
And I've kind of been that way, I would say, for the past 6-7 years.
Okay.
Because I learned that I get more done. So for me, it was a decision around productivity. You know, it's the nature of the career choice is a lot of folks are pretty flexible about it.
Yeah.
A lot of companies don't have the luxury of having offices in certain locations.
Yeah.
I've been fortunate enough with now and then previous employer that they have offices everywhere I need to be, and I'm within walking distance.
Yeah.
So it kind of works out. So especially when, like, you know, I can walk over and just talk to somebody for an answer versus having to wait on an email or a chat or a call and hunt them down. So, again, a lot of pros and cons. You know, people like the idea. You know, my original vision was, hey, one day if I had a family, you know, I have the flexibility to maybe, you know, go to the kids' PTA or whatever it is and then come home and work something later.
Dare to dream, Ben.
But I don't know. I think in the end, it depends on who you are. But I'll tell you that the strong trend for the Amazon and the Googles is to have a presence in the office.
Okay.
Because of how fast they're growing.
Yeah.
They're of the belief that it is hard to get people ramped up quickly if you're not centralized around others.
So what's the best thing of working from home?
Best thing about working from home? Flexibility. But it's funny, it's like nowadays things are getting so virtual and remote. Like one weird thing on Google is that they're big on video conferences.
Yeah.
Like hardcore.
Yeah.
So even if you're home, you can't, like, you know, look like a bum.
Yeah.
So you know, Amazon was big on, like, conference calls.
Yeah.
So it's also conference calls, video conferences, it's so remote that, like, it's starting, the lines are getting a little blurred.
Yeah.
And the other angle is, especially when I was at Amazon, you know, it's FaceTime. You end up finding that you probably spend at least half your time in front of customers.
Mm-hmm.
If you weren't, you know, you had a problem of having enough pipeline and activity.
Right. What's the worst thing working from home?
The fact that you've got significant others and family members that forget that you're working. Like, my wife will come in and say, hey, so let me talk to you about blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, babe, I'm working. Got a call coming on. She gets all pissed at me.
Yeah.
They think they're going to forget that you're working, right? They think it's just hanging out on a weekend.
Right. So you had an opportunity to work for an early stage small startup.
Yeah.
What's the best thing about that environment?
Opportunity. Opportunity and access. So opportunity being, again, they brought me in. They said, hey, we had a need. You did well. Come work for us, right? They can make quick decisions like that. In terms of access, I went on a couple customer calls with the CEO, like a year out of memory blue, which is awesome, right? just getting experiences like that is definitely unique when you're working for a small startup.
Okay. In your opinion, how important is it to work for a market leader?
So I have no regrets about who I've worked for. I've worked with the market leaders. I've worked for the number two guy. I've worked for the no name. I think what's helped me is that having been part of the startup, knowing what it's like to call into somebody who's never heard of you before, and then when you go to a market leader, you just realize that you have more of an edge, and it tends to help towards being a little bit more successful versus someone who's worked for a market leader the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they feel like, you know, they have a little bit of an ego about themselves or expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm of the belief that it's the ideal result is to have both.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
Versus one or the other. But then, you know, that's my personal.
Okay. Now let's talk about all the deals you've ever closed.
Okay. So I know every single one of them, since I can name drop all of them, right?
So what's been the biggest or your most favorite win thus far?
Favorite win was one I did at Amazon before leaving, because it definitely helped the idea of me going to a competitor, you know, sound a lot better.
Yeah.
I closed a $75 million deal for 5 years.
Okay.
That took me a year and a half.
A year and a half. $75 million, a year and a half.
Yeah. So,
what can you tell us about it?
Well, I don't know if you guys know much about ad tech. It's a space. So the Facebook and the Googles are big into it. So if you guys ever Google search something and then you realize Facebook is advertising the crap out of what you just searched,
mm-hmm.
There's a whole world around collecting your browsing history via cookies, and then in milliseconds bidding on an exchange for the equivalent of a billboard on Facebook or another website, right? Mm-hmm. So there is a big market leader out of downtown San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
And they were one of the most sophisticated customer I've ever dealt with. Like, their low-level engineers had PhDs in quantum computing. Right, from like, you know, Ivy League schools and stuff. So like, and so they were doing things at scale that was literally almost breaking AWS.
Okay.
So it was just hairy left and right. They kept pushing the boundaries of what the, you know, the different cloud services can do.
Who are you up against? Were they looking at Google? Google, okay.
Yeah, they were looking at Google, or doing it in-house because they built a lot of intellectual property around their own in-house tools because they had so many smart people.
Yeah.
But they realized that wasn't their core business.
Yep.
So they were trying to figure out if there was something better. So it was just an ongoing engagement. It required me to get approvals from the CEO of AWS and Jassy, and then the final deal even had to go up to Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon.
Wow.
So, yeah, talk about nerve-wracking.
What a feather in your cap.
Yeah, that. The other win was with that wasn't even my number one account. they became that before I left, but my number one account was a IoT startup that wasn't quite sure if they wanted to fully adopt AWS.
Yeah.
So I was told when I picked up the account, don't talk about this, don't talk about this, don't cover this, and don't reach out to their CEO. So their CEO, this is it's kind of like straight out of like Silicon Valley, like the personality types. So the CEO, he was worth $2.2 billion. Mm-hmm. His name is Tom Siebel. He was known. He was known for, so for the rest of you guys, he became a big executive working for Larry Ellison at Oracle. Tried to convince Larry to get in this new space for CRMs before Salesforce, before Microsoft Dynamics and all of that. And Larry was like, no, I don't want to get into this. So he left. He started a company called Siebel Systems, who then created the product, blew up. And then he managed to convince Larry to buy the company for over $6 billion over 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. This guy is like the 1% of the 1%. He sits on the board of engineering over at Cal Berkeley, Stanford, bunch of schools. Like I've never seen a guy be able to, like, so my story on how, on one fire drill was he had this opportunity in China, and he didn't want to work with, you know, data centers in China because he didn't want them to steal his IP, mm-hmm. right? You know? And he was like, all right, I need to talk to an executive at AWS. He didn't know me at the time, not that I was an executive, but like I couldn't help him. So he goes, well, who do I know that can help me out? So he calls this guy, a buddy of his called by the name of Bing Gordon. Bing sat on the board of a startup company called Zynga in San Francisco, but also sat on the board of this little company called Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. So Bing's got, okay, I got somebody for you. Within 5 minutes, Tom Siebel gets the CEO of AWS to call him back. Mm-hmm. Dropped everything, gives him a call. And then what ends up happening is that, you know, they were like, yeah, let's connect tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. I get at like 7 p.m. the night before, an email that trickled down from worldwide VPs, et cetera, mm-hmm. going, what's this meeting going on tomorrow? Mm-hmm. So, like, but that's my favorite story about this, like, the kind of guy he is and the access he has. So, I just trying to figure out how do I get this personality in his company to just go all in, not have to worry about anybody else. And finally it dawned on me, I was like, you know what? Our IoT story at AWS at the time really sucks. How awesome would it be for us to partner with these guys? Mm-hmm. So I started planting seeds, kind of orchestrating a couple of things, and then by playing the angle of, hey, hey, Mr. Tom Siebel, let me talk to you about how we're going to make you money and how you grow, mm-hmm. conversation changed entirely, and we made partnership decisions based on their agreements to, you know, adopt everything that we had to offer.
Interesting.
Right.
Awesome.
So that was another fun one. So kind of
okay.
Two different spectrums.
How about your worst loss or most painful loss?
Okay, got an easy one for you on that one.
Everyone remembers their losses.
Funny question. So I spend a good amount of time interviewing now these days, especially at Amazon. So a question I ask is, tell me about your biggest win, and then I followed up because everyone loves talking about their wins.
Yeah.
But all right, give me a loss.
Yeah.
95% of the people stall.
Stall.
Right. Like, because everybody's 100%, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're so good, they can't remember their losses. For me, I lost to Giorgio Armani in New York. I had just joined the AWS, and I was relying on this VP of IT who was a big fanboy. He wanted to do everything, and I thought that, hey, this guy had the right influence. And it was a typical mistake of not going high enough. I met the CIO we reported to, but I didn't do my homework, and I didn't realize the guy wasn't a tech guy. Mm-hmm. He was a business finance guy. Mm-hmm. And I also didn't make the right choice of the partner to work with, mm-hmm. to provide the services to actually migrate. And they kind of dropped the ball on a lot of things, and I found out afterwards when we lost the deal, one of the decision criteria was, you know, does Giorgio Armani like this partner? And the answer was no. It was at the very bottom of their options. Mm. So I wasn't plugged in. I wasn't having the right conversations. And ever since then, it was the one that got away.
I gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Thanks. In your opinion, what's more important, your company or your manager?
So if I were to think this one through, I definitely would say manager, because I don't care who you work for, if you can't get along with your manager, you don't enjoy your job, you don't enjoy which you do. All right. So, so obviously, you can't choose one without the other, especially when you interview.
Right. Okay. So, looking back over your career, what manager has been your favorite? outside of memory blue.
Of course, outside of memory blue.
Right. He reported to Mark, by the way.
You know what's? I would have to say the one that I had right before leaving UWS.
So the one at your last manager at AWS?
Correct.
Male or female?
Female.
Female. So what did she do that none of the other managers did?
She did a couple things. One, I learned a long time ago whenever I had a new manager, the first thing I did was I'd take them out in customer meetings with me. The reason why is because the first thing a manager will do, if you think about it from their perspective, is who do I got to worry about? Right? They got a brand new team. They don't know what they're capable of. Typically, they need to start thinking, well, shoot, you know, who am I strong, weak, and who do I need to worry about? So to make sure they don't think they got to worry about me, I book them solid for 2 days, and we go in meetings. Stack the deck a little bit, and you go with a fairer one sometimes. But obviously, like, if you do your job right, it should go well. Mm-hmm. And this manager, she went to these meetings with me. At the end, she's like, I got nothing to add. Great job. Your customers love you. Keep up the good work. And then afterwards, you know, my weekly reviews with her were around her challenging me. And I found out later it was her management style. Not to the point where she was insulting me, but like when I'd say, yeah, you know, this deal will come in next week. And she goes, you sure? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, what makes you think that? And I was like, well, he told me. And I was like, did he tell you specifically? Did he say we will close this next Friday? And I'm like, no, but we did all of this. He's got nothing else to do but sign the piece of paper. So, like, just the way that she kind of allowed me to think things to make sure I was sharper and cleaner about what I was doing, mm-hmm. I think made her the best manager I had. And then she, you know, once she felt like, you know, again, this is also... Not all managers should do this. It depends. But from my perspective, I felt like I had everything that I needed. And she knew that if I needed to escalate, I pulled her in immediately. So it was a combination of someone who could help me grow, but yet give me the freedom to do my job without getting in the way. Mm-hmm. And then helping me escalate and backing me up when I needed it.
I see. So it sounds like she was a challenger.
Yeah.
Okay.
But she, again, every manager finds their own ways on how they challenge you.
Right.
And I think she was aware enough to figure out how to challenge me in a way that I could positively react to it.
I see. Right. Okay. Switching gears, what's your favorite incentive or spiff you've ever heard of in your time in sales?
So, again, just the recent stuff just comes to mind. So, what I'm a big fan of is when you see, so, like, obviously outside of doing your day-to-day job, always pay attention to the decisions the business makes, right? Like the company you work for make, because one day you might be the executive, right? So the things that I love are the spiffs or the incentives that, you know, the old saying is comp dictates behavior, right? So theoretically, the way you get paid should incentivize you to do the right things in the best interest of the company. So Amazon did an accelerator, like a 3x accelerator, mm-hmm. on revenue, on deals that were multi-year deals. So especially when I closed my $75 million 5 year, I was really happy about that one, where... you know, but the reason why I liked it wasn't necessarily the financial reward, was it reminded me to ask for that commitment, right? Mm-hmm. It was like, hey, look, you're going all in with us. What's the difference between 1 year and 5 years is X discount?
Yeah.
This is in the best interest of the customer. And high five AWS, you're going to pay me a lot more for it.
Right.
Right? So for me, the best incentives are the one that align with the best interests of the rep as well as the customer.
And the company.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Good. So in your career, have most of your quotas been monthly, quarterly, semi-annually, or annually?
So most of them have been annually, but that are paid out quarterly.
Okay.
Right.
Yep.
That answers the question, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. How do you keep your skills sharp?
You never settle for mediocrity. If you're not growing, find something new or find something else to learn. It's that simple for me. And what I mean by growing is if you don't feel like you're challenged, if you don't feel like you're, whatever that is, you're not getting bigger deals, you're not getting larger commitments. If you're not pointing to something that you're, that's what's nice about a lot of the companies that do the performance reviews, that if you're not showing a track record, look at LinkedIn. If you're not showing a track record of improvement, do something about it. Because otherwise, I call it the twilight zone. You get stuck in this little gray area where you just exist, right? And the joke was that's what all the guys at IBM were like, right? Mm-hmm. And they end up, and you become excess fat. So if a company's downsized, you're expendable.
Easy target.
Right.
Where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
So I'm in an interesting place professionally. I joke that even though I'm a young 35, that I'm kind of in a professional midlife crisis a little bit. Because my goal in the beginning was I wanted to close the biggest deals, biggest names, work with the biggest companies, and then I wanted to work for the biggest companies, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of been really lucky and fortunate to accomplish a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of like, well, now what? Mm-hmm. So one thing that was kind of an unexpected surprise was when I did the computer science stuff on the side. Mm-hmm. I did it initially to want to better understand what my customers were doing, because I went from dealing with the CIO to now dealing with the CTO and his developers and just new stuff that they were creating. Mm-hmm. A nice side effect of that is now I understand how software is made. I understand what these new trends are. Like, I can communicate it to my grandmother if I had to. Mm-hmm. So it's now got me thinking, well, what if I could do this, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know where that's going to go, but what's cool about the network I've been able to make is that I got guys that I've known for years that I can call out that are engineers out of San Francisco and be like, dude, let's do a side project and see if it takes off somewhere. Mm-hmm. So outside of obviously company time, I'm thinking about doing that. And then, within Google, I think I'm going to see if there's more things I can accomplish. I'm in this weird phase where I could also maybe look at management. I've had the idea of management before, but not to crack on you with management, but you get out of the world of where you're the point man and you're the one getting the work done, to now where you're really in the business of just managing people, right? And I'm not sure if I'm ready to be taken off the field, so to speak, and to be that manager quite yet. One day, sure. I obviously want to give back. I want to be able to share what I've been able to learn and help the next generation, et cetera. But I think there's still stuff that I feel like I can tackle and accomplish. Mm-hmm. Let me figure out what that is.
Okay. Good. Let's just switch gears real quick. We'll do some rapid fire.
Okay.
Rapid fire questions.
Hey, we love rapid fire.
All right. Washington, D.C. or Washington State?
Don't hate me. Washington State.
Washington State. Seahawks or Redskins?
Redskins.
Yeah. Favorite coffee shop in Seattle?
Across the street, Uptown Espresso, but I've actually stopped coffee.
Okay. Working at the office or remote?
Office.
Working at headquarters or a regional office?
Headquarters.
Big company or small company?
Small group within a big company.
Big company. Selling direct or selling through the channel?
Direct.
Storage or security?
Security.
Individual contributor or manager?
Individual contributor.
High volume transactional sale or handful of big dollar enterprise deals?
Big boys.
Sales call, solo or with a manager?
Solo.
Best sales book?
Sandler.
Best career advice you've ever received?
What I said earlier. The best salespeople in the world are the ones who know everything but pretend to know nothing.
Very good. Great. I just want to open up the floor to some questions for Ben.
What's your favorite use of the word Google? I never use the word Google. You know, it's funny when you work for a company like that, like, you know, people went from asking me about, you know, their package that they lost at Amazon to now the reaction when you get to Google is kind of a little bit different because of the movies, people hear about the perks. I think the latest one you hear now is, like, you know, a lot of the companies, they come up with their own names based on their name of the company for their employees, so Google your Googler.
Restarted.
Yeah. And so the newbies, though, when you're there, like, your first year called a Noogler. Like I said, don't judge me. I don't go around using them every day. So.
What's the one piece of communication when you remember glue that you wish you had received, like, from somebody else?
What do you mean, like advice?
Yeah, or just like advice or like some insight that you wish you would, had been communicated to you that while you were there that would help you later.
You know what? Again, this sounds so freaking cheesy out of like a self-help book or like a sappy movie, but like I think I wish I would have enjoyed the ride a little bit better, right? Like, because again, I'm sure you guys already know what it's like. You're trying to make a name for yourself at this phase, right? So like I was so heads down, I was just plowing through. Got me results, which is great, but like finding the opportunity to just pause and go, man, this is awesome. This is fun, like enjoying yourself, finding some time to like, you know, really enjoy. You know, I think kind of makes it all worth it. Otherwise, you wake up one day and you're like, so what? Right.
Zachy.
So you've been to quite a few companies. What would be your top three strengths that you would look for into a into going to a new company, and what are the top three things you would stay away from?
Okay, top three things that I would look for. One, I've now working with a lot of really amazing people that are just being super innovative. I've kind of gotten jaded where when I look for a company, I want to know that they're really doing, for better word, like, cool shit, right? I want to know that these guys are doing stuff that are just like, people are like, wow, right? Because part of my earlier story, I was working, you know, of supporting a product that just was poorly made, and, you know, I became the heat shield. So part of me is that, you know, I feel uniquely, I geek out a little bit about what my company's doing and the products they offer, because to me it makes it more enjoyable, right? Why be a car sales guy if you don't geek out on cars? So that's one. Second thing is the other thing I'm looking for is the people, right? If you notice, the other trend is I'm very unlikely to go to some place where I don't get a chance to talk to people that have been there or people that I, you know through someone I know that I trust. Because when you make a professional move like that, the one thing I didn't want to do is be a job hopper, right? I think the shortest place I've been somewhere was Memory Blue, right? Everywhere else was 4 or 5 years. Because I was always told that, especially in sales, you know, if a sales rep experiences a lot of success in less than 2 to 3 years, they were lucky. Right? Like, and if you sit on that and you think about, especially if they were handed like a brand new patch, it takes time. Especially on certain type of products and deals, it takes time. So if you're there for at least 3 years and then you're able to show, well, I kicked butt, I hit club, I did this, I, you know, overachieved. With the right sales manager, that carries a lot more weight than someone who's been around for like a year. So as a result, I'm big on people. So that's number two. Number three. The other thing is I think about is like, I think about how I can grow there. Right? What are the opportunities? So one cool thing about Amazon is that they believe it's hard to find good people. So they are very flexible about you changing roles or moving. So they ask you just stay in role for a year. I have a buddy who joined AWS, used to work at EMC, and after a year, he was like, you know what? I want to know what it's like to live and work in Europe. So AWS was, hey, interview, hiring manager wanted him. They moved him to Amsterdam. Oh, right? So the dude's living it up in Amsterdam. He rides a freaking bike to his customer meetings. Right? And I recently did a two-week vacation trip to Europe, and I got to hang out with them for a couple nights. Right? So, like, figuring out stuff like that, so figuring out where you could go is also important. Three things I don't look for. Heavy turnover, right? Always ask the question, why is this role open? Is it because of growth, or is it because the last guy left? Right? The other one is money. Okay, so funny thing about money. Be realistic, right? Talk to people within your network or people who've been there to gauge what the money should be. And if it's a lot higher, that should be a red flag. Right?
Sound familiar, Zaggy? We just had that conversation yesterday, but keep going.
Okay, and then the third thing is, I guess kind of overlapped earlier, the hiring manager, right? Like, I'm interviewing him or her. Like, what's their style? What are they looking for? What are their expectations? Right? And sometimes that, like, I know some people that even at AWS, like, nowhere is perfect. They came on, then 6 months they left. Right, the same day I did, because they hated their manager. I lucked out. I didn't have the same guy, and they unfortunately did. All right. Question.
You said one of the biggest flaws you saw in one of your old coworkers was that they chased money.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of curious to what you were chasing that entire time, and I kind of feel like you answered what you're chasing now.
So out of memory blue, I was chasing opportunity, right? Opportunity and growth. Like you remember earlier saying, like, you know, I wanted to find a way to get to the field, right? Because I knew that, I'd own the customer relationship. I'd be the point guy. I also know it put me in certain income brackets. And like I said, don't get me wrong, pay is important, right? But, like, it shouldn't be the very reason why you do something. So I left, you know, the company that brought me in. So I went from doing lead generation like you guys to inside sales. And then I took a chance at Symantec, starting off in kind of like a sales ops or deal desk role. I don't know if you guys are familiar what that is, but I got involved working with all the field reps and helping them design and like strategize on how their deals will look like the really big ones. And then I went from there, I moved into a channel role, so I worked with partners. And then eventually I was given that sales specialist role. So I kind of bounced a little bit, but I always had like a North Star that got me there. And what was nice is that when you're a field rep, having experience on how to design deals, work with partners, or, you know, deal with an extended team of specialists are all relevant. So that's how I was able to justify it. But I had this goal in mind of, hey, I wanted to be that field rep, and I was comfortable with it being a couple of years out, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answered your question, but for me in the beginning it was opportunity, and then once I got the opportunity, it then became the right opportunity, right, like for the right company.
I think you might allude to this earlier, but if you have like a certain like geographical location in mind that you want to go to, what kind of advice do you have for like negotiating that in general with the people you're interviewing for and stuff?
Well, one, what kind of addresses that already is if the job posting or the role is designed to be in that geo, right, in that city. What you'll see is a lot of folks, you got a couple buckets, right? Some folks are like, hey man, especially here, you're an all-star, but we're located in San Francisco. Would you consider moving out here? Well, we got an opportunity for you. So the other situation is, if there's a team that you know that's about to create a headcount, and you're working at the same company, you know, they'll typically have an idea of where they want the role to be, right? And then the last one, which is actually tied to what I'm doing here at Google, I was actually originally asked to come to LA instead. But my wife had just too much going on for her in Seattle, and she moved out from here to Seattle for me. So I finally gave her, you know, the call. I was like, look, you did this for me. It's up to you. So she was like, well, I'm going to stay. And I was like, so I actually told the guy, hey, man, sorry if this is a deal breaker. I can't move. He's like, nope, we still want you. We'll make it work. Right? So a lot of things can go in a lot of different ways, but typically you'll find out ahead of time. It's like a lead, qualified out. Right?
Going into the Google interview, you said you sourced that $75 million deal with AWS.
Mm-hmm.
What was your mindset heading into that Google interview, knowing that you kind of stole that from them?
You know what? Well, so one clarification, not to get down a rat hole, but what's interesting is in the state of Washington, unlike California or New York, I don't know how it is in Virginia, but they can enforce non-competes. So a non-compete is a document you sign when you start your employment with whoever it is, that says, I won't go to a competitor for X period of time. It's not very common, but Amazon unfortunately got me early because I fell so in love with working for them. So to avoid that, or to kind of make it not a big deal, I went to a role that's completely different than what I was doing at AWS, right? I also thought it was a cleaner break, so that way, when I did leave, again, I wanted to leave on the best terms possible, because I might need these managers to be references for me one day, right? So there was not any bad blood. Because of the folks that I worked with at AWS that were also at Google, they kind of heard about the deal too. So word got around to who the Google rep was, and he did ping me. he kind of asked for, you know, some insight. He was respectful about what I could and couldn't say, which was interesting. So I got to meet the guy I was competing with. And actually, in my head, I was like, heck yeah, I got you, right? But no, if you think about it, there's no reason to kind of rub anything in, right? Like, what benefit does that do for you? So no, there was no fallout or anything like that.
What's been the biggest skill that you learned at Memory Palooza throughout your career?
I don't know if it's a skill, but I would say it's more of a character trait, which is to be kind of fearless, right? To be like, not give it, you know, an F. Just when people give up, when, like, to be persistent. So now that you guys intimately know my work history, remember, I didn't get into Amazon the first time, right? I had to go at it again, and even then the interview went sour, and I had to fight for it, right? Guess what? My story with Google, I didn't get in the first time either. It took another time for me to get it. So it's incredibly humbling. Most people give up and are like, screw these guys, I'm out. But like, if this is what you want, just be a fighter, go at it, right? But obviously, don't be dumb about it. Don't bang your head on the wall continuously. Find out, okay, so this didn't work. Why? How do I get in? You know, how do I try it a different way that'll work out better? Right? And what's nice is when you're cold calling the crap out of people, it's easy to develop that skill.
Nick?
Yeah.
Sure. So you mentioned the degree, going back and getting the degree.
Yeah.
Is that something you'd recommend for anyone to, not maybe get a degree, but go more into the technical back end of things, or was that more specific to what you are hoping to achieve?
So the reason why I went back, and again, I don't get paid, so if it sounds like I'm selling them, it's just because I'm happy with my choice. So I don't know anybody over there. I'm not getting $100 on here on the side. But I started going online, and I was like, oh, there's Treehouse, there's Khan Academy, there's a bunch of other stuff. I can learn on my own, but I discovered that I needed a little bit of structure. So I don't know if you guys ever play mental games with yourself. Mine is, if I spend money, I'm going to get pissed if I waste it. And then if it's got self-imposed deadlines, then I can stick with it. So what I found was I think they're at the very bottom, but a top 25 engineering school came out with this online degree that was very affordable. It was Oregon State University. And what they have this program of is it's called a post-baccalaureate degree. So it's designed for people who already have a bachelor's degree. So it's like picking up a second major. So it's major specific. I didn't have to go back and take crazy stuff like Culp for art history. It was just specific to computer science. And it laid a lot of foundational stuff for me. And it's taken me about a little over 3 years to do just on myself, like one class a semester, right? The reason why I did that was because technically you could go after a master's or even an MBA, right? Which was another thought I thought about. I didn't choose an MBA because I think you get more value out of, well, by that time I had put like 8 to 10 years into my career, so you could joke that I had a real world MBA. But also, if I went back for an MBA, it's because I'm chasing after executive or management roles. They tend to value that a little bit more. I didn't go after a master's on the tech side because, in my experience, and I could be wrong, that tended to be more theoretical, more, I'd call it fluff, right? I wanted hard skills. I wanted, like now I can code in 4 or 5 different languages. When someone says, hey, I want to do, this is important, this is why, I want to go, okay, yeah, I get it, right? And with my business and sales background, I'm able to translate that to people who aren't technical necessarily, right? So I don't know if that answered your question, but that was kind of my thinking on why I went down that path. And like I said, it started off just kind of as a side thing. But again, it's a nice surprise. You just create options for yourself when you grow.
What are the biggest fields right now that you see new solutions or products that have an opportunity to succeed?
If we're talking about trends, all right, I don't want to geek out here too bad. So the ones that come to mind that are in my world that I see is that the other reason why I left AWS is because I think in the next 5 years, it's all going to become a commodity, meaning everyone's got one. There's no differentiator between them, right? It's like, you know, antivirus is antivirus, right? Do you really care what your PC antivirus is most of the time? Most people don't. Some people do. But I was worried that was going to happen there. But where I see the trend in the cloud going is this concept of serverless. So where there's a future where either through voice or visuals, anybody can create an application, right? And what all that is just more abstraction, more removing all the bits and bytes and dealing with hardware or learning code or anything like that. You're going to get to a point where, hey, if I just click on this icon and I move it here and I do it this way or I tell Alexa to create this, that I think is an emerging space. The other one that I see coming, and marketing kind of kills this one, and they call it AI, but it's not like Skynet from Terminator or anything like that, or Jarvis from Iron Man. It's machine learning. So if anybody here watches Silicon Valley, you ever see the Nosy app that they seafood app that they talked about? Or have you ever seen the hot dog no hot dog app? So that's machine learning, where it's you teach a machine to recognize a pattern, and you just feed it a boatload of data, right? So that's really what machine learning is. That's how people can recognize visuals, translate text. Those are very, very baby steps to the real world of like AI. But I think what companies are trying to latch on is figuring out how do they apply that to everyday things and disrupt technology the way it is doing that. So I would say those are the two, like if you're talking about bleeding edge. And then I thought I'd throw in one last one in the IoT space, the idea of having compute horsepower everywhere, right? So there's not a delay from when a camera needs to talk to a server, it's right there versus having to go a couple states to a data center.
Great, thank you. Sure.
Two more.
So you talked about keeping in touch with your managers, you know, when you were leaving Amazon,
mm-hmm.
There's no bad blood, making sure because they might be references. And that's obviously something that we all have to think about and worry about. So I was wondering, do you have any advice for keeping in touch with managers who aren't necessarily your friends because they were your bosses or whatever, but you want to maintain that relationship and keep it strong maybe over years or months and whatever?
So let me be the first one to say I'm not the best at it, right? But what I do focus on is when I do leave, making sure that I'm not, I have to be so rash about, I'm not screwing them, right? Because that's what they're going to remember about me, right? Like, if I put them in a great place. So just to give you an example, when I left AWS, not only did I close that deal, I then, without them asking, I wrote a 1 to 2 page description of every single one of my 10, 12 accounts on who the people are, what's the history, what I think they should focus on in the pipeline for the next 3 to 6 months, and then I sent it to them, right? Amazon policy required them to walk me out, meaning collect my badge and my computer, whether they wanted to or not, because I went to a competitor. So it, for a lot of people, it could have gotten messy, but because I went above and beyond, I made sure I left on the best terms, they actually invited me back 3 weeks ago to throw me a happy hour on the side, right? Because of the circumstance, they felt bad about that. In my experience, how you leave, like, the worst thing you can do, especially if you're itching to move, is let your performance dip, right? Like, you want to be slaying it, you want to be killing it, and then you want to leave on a high note. Otherwise, why would they ever want to help you out in the future? And Amazon and Google require references, right? But hopefully I left on good terms with these guys, and then every couple of years I would ping them and go, hey, you might be in a reference, right?
Yeah.
And these guys have been awesome about it, right? So, and then, you know, randomly I'll get a, I'll hear from Mark going, hey man, yeah, can you hook me up with a free pass to your user conference? and then I end up syncing up with him and, you know, hanging out in Vegas. And, you know, when I haven't been back here in 5-6 years, so when I did, I just picked these guys up and asked if they wanted to connect for a coffee or a lunch or something, so.
You can get talked into doing this.
Yeah, I got asked yesterday, so I'm like, ah, sure. I was thinking I was coming in and talking to like 10, 15 people. So when I came in and saw you guys, I was like, holy cow.
All right, last question.
What would you say is your passion?
My
and
passion.
Would you say this passion has gotten you this far, or was it your curiosity to learn about things?
So that's a really good question. So if it makes you feel any better, I don't know. Because again, not to get all weird and like super theoretical and stuff, but like I think about this a lot because you get spoon fed, chase your passion, right? Some people are fortunate enough to figure that out early. I'll give you an example. So my wife is a music theater performer. She loves that. She complains about how it pays nothing, but she loves it, right? So because I haven't really found like my passion at such a young age, shoot, at one point I thought it was football, right? But not everybody can do that. So that's why I'm big when I'm around people that found their passion. I'm actually pretty jealous. That's why I keep telling her, don't worry about working, go chase your passion. But after thinking about it for a while, just recently, I think my passion is just working with amazing people doing some really cool stuff. That's the stuff that gets me excited in the morning. I know it's super broad and kind of bland, but like I think that's kind of what my passion has evolved into. Yeah, right? Like think about it. If you're like around a guy who's just super smart and he comes up with something you never thought about, that aha moment to me is cool. I enjoy that. And then when you work on something that's just nobody else has ever done, that's fun. You know, pioneering, treading new stuff, that's exciting for me. So if I correlate excitement with passion, that's what it would be.
All right, very good. Well, Ben, I want to thank you for...
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
...sharing your knowledge. I'll turn it over to Kristen.
Hey, guys, get your phones out, please.
We score, anonymously score trainings now.
Oh. Hey, you know what? Actually, you might get a kick out of this.
You don't know what to do. Turn to your neighbor, please.
Hold on one second.
Ask them for help.
I have to stop this.
MBS or MBNO.